Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
And I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
You're the best! We're the beautiful! We're the only!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
To the Back in Time podcast. I am your host, Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD. JD, how are you today?
Hey, man, doing well. Super excited about today's episode. Getting into a little bit of a Lost Boys action.
Absolutely. Ready to jump into the 1987 horror comedy film. So you guys are hitting the download button on episode 51, and we're about to talk about the Lost Boys. But before we do, let's jump into the DeLorean and go back to last week when you were in town, JD, and we got to sit down in my office and do some Back to the Future. What was your feedback on the episode? And, you know, we kind of had a big week with the teaser trailer and the Kasene Gaines interview. So what would you hear from all those different episodes?
Big week for sure. It was episode 50 for us, so dear listeners, thank you for sticking around for so long, and nothing but love coming for especially the Kasene Gaines interview. I mean, people were sort of eating up everything that he had to say, so it was kind of a treat to be able to feature that sort of behind the scenes backstage access that our audience kind of wants. I mean, do you guys want this, right? Should we do more interviews? Tweet us your love or your hate.
Yeah, and something you guys did not get to hear after the episode was over, we got to talk a little bit more with Kasene off the record, and he may or may not have told us we could get a certain character from A Christmas Story. So, spoiler alert, it's Ralphie's brother. Yeah, so that's what might be coming down the pipeline pretty soon. Now, if you guys are listening to this episode, make sure after every episode that you interact with us on Twitter, Instagram. Shoot us an email over at backintimepodcast@gmail.com and tell us what you like about the show. And if you really love it and you haven't left us a review yet, make sure you do that on Apple Podcast or Google Play. That's going to help us continue to grow and just get a little bit bigger every single week. And that's what she said. JD, let's talk about what's coming down the pipeline. So every week we talk about what's coming down the pipeline for the show. What's coming into theater. So next week on the podcast, we are discussing Blue Chips, starring Shaquille O'Neal, Nick Nolte, Little Penny, and a whole bunch of others. JD, let's preview it here real quick. What are you looking forward to with Blue Chips?
First of all, let's just remind the audience, you all voted for this episode, so you better damn well listen, because I wanted to do Kazam.
I am, because I am.
I wish for junk food to the sky! Blue Chips, though, is a pretty unique and a pretty cool movie. It has a great approach to college basketball, and it brings in some great college basketball stars to be a part of the cast and wraps it up with Nick Nolte. It's a kind of an interesting movie, and this will be – we've touched the sports – before, but I don't think in this dramatic of fashion. So I'm curious to see where we go with this, and I want your feedback, because again, you picked this. So if it's another Suburban Commando episode, all fault goes to you.
I don't think it's going to be. I think it's going to be better than we expect. But I'm also worried that we're not going to be able to get enough laughs out of this, other than maybe making fun of Nick Nolte's voice of, "Damn it, Tony!" That's my best Nick Nolte I can do, and that really hurt my vocal cords.
That wasn't bad. You got a week to practice.
I'll keep trying. Let's talk about the movie theater and what we have coming in this weekend. There's a couple movies. I've got a feeling you're not excited about any of the three that I'm about to name, but we'll give it a go. So we've got a movie coming out. It's an action comedy called The Spy Who Dumped Me, with Mila Kunis and Kate McKinnon. JD, any interest in seeing The Spy Who Dumped Me?
Nope.
What about the sequel, The Poop That Dumped?
Is that like the pee that took a poop from South Park?
Could be. Yeah, I'm not interested in that movie in the least. There's also a sci-fi thriller called The Darkest Minds. Any interest in that one?
Nope.
And this one I know I'm going to be going to go see because my wife's going to have me go into the theater to watch it. And it's the Disney movie Christopher Robin, about a working class family man, Christopher Robin, who encounters his childhood friend, Winnie the Pooh, who helps him rediscover the joys of life. JD, do you like Winnie the Pooh?
First of all, you said poo, so that's funny.
Yeah.
I'm not a big poo fan. When it comes down to it, at the end of the day, I could go without poo. Take it or leave it. But I do think that this looks like a pretty ambitious and a pretty cool movie. I'm sure it's something that I will one day see. I'm just not running to the theaters until they do like a Muppet Babies movie. That'll get me, right?
Yeah. I wish you would have felt that way about poo when you were here, though, because, I mean, you clogged up my toilet for 3 days.
Yeah, I did.
Too much toilet paper. Hey, let's talk about our, oh, wow, moments of the week.
Wow, flippers and all, wow.
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 This is a nice boat.
Wow, I sort of got screwed on the old bedroom selection. Every room's like 4 times as big as mine.
JD, give me your oh, wow, moment of the week.
Let's talk a little James Gunn. I don't know if this is even going to be still newsworthy by the time this episode hits, but I'm sure as all of you know, as we're recording, Disney cut loose James Gunn for a series of really odd, weird, super creepy tweets from almost like, what, a decade ago? Citing that they're not part of Disney's family-friendly voice. They gave him the axe, and I know that there's already petitions out there to try to bring him back on board, but you have to compare what he did and said to what Roseanne did and said, and hopefully that's not a double standard for celebrity nonsense on Twitter. Seriously, stop tweeting weird stuff, people.
Yeah, maybe just get off of Twitter completely if you know it's going to cost you your job. Or if you do have one, only do it to promote stuff. Like, hey, I have a new movie out. You guys should check it out.
Well, it's like the whole reason why Ryan made Creed's blog in the office just a Word document. Some things are just not ready for the internet. And it just baffles me that – and I get in defense of him what he was saying and where he was coming from and being such a young filmmaker at the time. I'm not faulting him, but you still are responsible for the things that you say. And I think that he took the slap on the wrist with much aplomb.
I can't give him a pass. Some of the stuff he said, like if it was just like normal, like dick joke humor, like I would give him a pass on that. But like he was talking about like, you know, getting blowjobs from like little kids, like it went too far. And like Hollywood has a pretty big issue right now with the mistreatment of certain people with auditions and the whole Me Too movement that's been going on. You can't give him a pass for this.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he deserves a pass. I just understand.
Yeah.
Stupid stuff happens. I'm just thinking that's why all I do on Twitter is burp. You know, yeah. I just keep burping.
I retweeted a burp the other day from you.
See, that's the beauty part of Twitter. I burped at one place here in America, and somewhere else in America, that burp came out the other end of a computer.
Speaking of getting a pass for saying stuff that's kind of dumb, my oh wow moment of the week is my wife decided to let my in-laws listen to an episode of our podcast.
Oh boy.
Shortly into our Lost World episode, we started talking about the porno sequel to The Lost World, directed by, I think we were talking about Schindler's List, and we called it Schlong's List. Directed by Stephen Hardon. Stephen, I don't know what we called him, Stephen Longdick. And yeah, they were not happy at all, apparently. And I owe them an apology at some point.
Well, so, I think you just apologized on air, and an on-air apology is worth more than 1,000 written cards, so I think you're off the hook.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be back on the listen anytime soon.
But they did download.
They did, and you guys should too. Subscribe to the podcast for free. It's on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, YouTube. You never miss an episode. And we don't ask you for any money. We just ask you to support us and leave us a 5-star review. JD, let's talk some intro to Lost Boys. The Lost Boys is a 1987 American horror comedy film directed by Joel Schumacher, starring Jason Patric, Corey Haim, Kiefer Sutherland, Jamie Gertz, and Corey Feldman. The film is about two brothers who move to California and end up fighting a gang of young vampires. The title is a reference to The Lost Boys and J.M. Barrie's stories about Peter Pan and Neverland, who, like vampires, never grow old. The film was followed up by two direct-to-video sequels, The Lost Boys The Tribe, Lost Boys The Thirst, and spawned a franchise with the same name. JD, let's talk about, you know, I know we did first memories and teaser trailer, but just going back and watching The Lost Boys for the first time, and I assume probably a long time for you, what were your first impressions of The Lost Boys after seeing it as an adult?
I was pleasantly surprised with a lot of what they did with the aesthetics of this movie, and the acting and the music just blows me away. It creates an atmosphere and a mood that few movies do, and much in the same way that Back to the Future is like a time capsule to the 80s. I think The Lost Boys does that too, and really does a great job of exemplifying California culture in the 1980s and what that means to be living on that beach coastal town and to be afraid of vampires.
Nice. Let's talk about filming a little bit. The majority of the film was shot in Santa Cruz, California. That includes the Santa Cruz Boardwalk, Pogo Nip Open Space Preserve, I don't even know if that's the right word, and other surrounding Santa Cruz mountains. Stage 12 and the Universal lot was used to build the vampire cave, and then also the interior and exterior of Pogo Nip Clubhouse and Grandpa's house. This surprised me a little bit, JD. Filming only lasted 3 weeks. So 21 days, assuming they didn't take a day off. Are you surprised such a small shoot schedule for what I thought was a pretty big production?
Yeah, that is pretty quick, especially given the talent that they had on staff.
Yeah, I mean, they have almost a $10 million budget, which for 1987 is a pretty good chunk of change. That really surprised me. Props to Schumacher and company for putting together a really good movie on a tiny shot schedule. That's impressive. Now, box office numbers, they did open number 2 domestically. It went on to gross over $30 million on an $8.5 million budget. The film was received pretty positively. Roger Ebert gave the movie 2.5 out of 4 stars and praised the cast. If you want to hear more about the box office numbers and critic response, check out our previous episode in the archives. Here's one thing I want to spend some time talking about, the soundtrack. JD, what do you like about the Lost Boys soundtrack?
People Are Strange, man. The song just sort of encapsulizes everything that this movie's about. And it does so in such a beautiful way that it just is, it's an infectious track that'll stick with you from opening credits to closing curtain.
I do like People Are Strange. I think that's a great tune. It was actually covered by Echo and the Bunnymen, so it's actually not the Doors singing it in the movie, just so there's no confusion there. But I think one of my favorite songs of the soundtrack is the I Still Believe, where they have the guy on the sweaty sax guy on the boardwalk.
Oh gosh, sweaty sax guy.
Such an 80s song, isn't it?
Yeah, and with sweaty sax guy too.
He's still very sweaty and still has a sax. We saw him. I saw him last year at the Indianapolis Comic Con. Good on him. I hope he's doing well. We should have got him on the podcast.
to play a little ditty.
I was going to say something inappropriate there when you said little ditty, but I'll leave it. How about the main track, which is kind of what this movie is known for, Cry Little Sister by G. Tom Mack. What do you think about that song?
Spooky as all get up.
I know our audience loves to hear you just hit those notes perfectly. Can you give us a little Cry Little Sister?
No.
Wow, that's disappointing.
Mostly because I don't remember the word, so.
Cry Little Sister.
There, you got it.
There you go.
You got some pipes. Them pipes is gold.
Appreciate that. Let's talk some interesting facts about Lost Boys. I got a couple really good ones here. So the original screenplay, written by John Fisher and James Jeremias, was originally about a bunch of Goonie-type 5th and 6th grade vampires, with the Frog Brothers being chubby 8-year-old Cub Scouts, and Star being a boy instead of a love interest. The original inspiration came from James, who caught upon the notion that Peter Pan could fly, visited Wendy and her brothers at night, and could never grow old. However, Schumacher hated the idea and told the producers he would only sign on if he could change them to teenagers, as he thought it would be much more sexier and much more interesting. J.D., Schumacher talking about teenage boys is very sexy, kind of freaks me out a little bit, but what do you think about that?
Sounds like he and James Gunn should be hanging out a little bit.
Maybe they have. What do you think about the script idea? Wanting Goonie-type characters and chubby Boy Scouts. That sounds awful.
If that were the movie, we would not be reviewing it right now.
Well, we don't know about that. We did Suburban Commando.
Yeah, but Suburban Commando had Hulk Hogan in it. Are you trying to say that this version would have Hulk Hogan in it?
Well, I'm saying it could have had Sloth from Goonies, and maybe we would have watched it.
I'm saying no. I'm saying we would not be watching it.
Okay. Good. Yeah, I think it was the right decision to make it a lot more serious. In the documentary, Bloodsucking Cinema, Corey Haim said all the blood had glitter in it to give it a shimmering effect, and it was slimier than fake blood. So when you're going back and rewatching this, try and pay attention and see if you could pick up on some of the glitter blood. JD, is that a Schumacher thing, you think?
I hope so. I mean, if you're going to be known for anything, it might as well be glitter blood.
Okay. In Max's video store, you can see a single copy of The Goonies on the shelf, which stars Corey Feldman, and you can also see Corey Feldman in the shot. JD, have you ever noticed the copy of The Goonies in there? Because I have not.
No, I did not notice that.
That's definitely something I'm going to look for here on the rewatch. The name The Frog Brothers, Edgar and Allan, is of course a reference to Edgar Allan Poe, the well-known writer of horror fiction. JD, did you know that, and are you a fan of Edgar Allan Poe?
You know, I don't think I ever really put that together, so props on them. It makes perfect sense, and I am a big fan of Poe. He does an amazing job of creating visceral and scary and weird and creepy worlds.
What's your favorite of his work?
I'm a big fan of The Murders in the Rue Morgue, and which is obviously the inspiration for Rue Morgue magazine, which is a great horror magazine.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a well-accomplished writer. He's got 354 credits on IMDb from stories that he, you know, has a hand in or that he's credited for. And the man died in 1849. Only lived to be 40.
Okay, mysteriously at that.
Corey Haim later said that his experience on Lost Boys was one of the greatest personal times in his life. We would know later on that he, of course, would die at a pretty young age, had a pretty rough career towards the middle and end of his career. Do you have any favorite Corey Haim movies, JD?
I'm a big fan of License to Drive.
Okay. I didn't think that you would be a License to Drive guy. I would have guessed this one or maybe Lucas.
Nobody talks about Lucas.
I love Lucas. You don't like Lucas?
All I said is nobody talks about it.
Well, I'm putting it on a poll topic next.
Well, then you put it on a poll topic. Obviously, he's great in Lost Boys. He's obviously great in License to Drive. And Kyle likes to talk about Lucas.
Hmm. Also, Dream a Little Dream. Good one. Like that movie as well. Jamie Gertz was recommended by Jason Patrick. Joel Schumacher was originally looking for a blonde, but they had previously starred in Solar Babies in 1986 and is probably the reason that he recommended her. Any thoughts on that, JD? Did you ever see Solar Babies?
I have not seen Solar Babies, but I could only assume the work is stellar.
Why do you think Hollywood in general kind of gets caught up on, well, we need a blonde, or we need a bimbo, or we need a girl with, you know, big boobs? Like, why not just cast the best person for the part?
It really depends on what the story is driving for and what the part needs to do to the overall story. So if the part of the bimbo is important to moving the narrative, then by all means, bimbo-fy the story.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that would have worked in this case?
You know, I think it could go either way, but I think that they made the right choice.
Yeah. Jamie Gertz, no slouch, though. She's a looker. Kiefer Sutherland's role as David, being one of the lead cast members, actually had the fewest lines amongst all the leading and supporting cast members. At the same time, he had the most dialogue amongst the four vampire lost boys. This included saying the name Michael 118 times. JD, what do you think about that?
It's a lot of Michaels, man. I think one of us ought to change our name to Michael for the rest of the episode.
Who does a better Michael? Kiefer Sutherland or Michael?
Michael. From
Arrested Development. Will Arnett.
I don't know. I'm kind of partial to Will Arnett's Michael.
Oh, George Michael.
There it is.
I love it. Jim Carrey was considered for the role of David. He had previously portrayed a vampire in the film Once Bitten. JD, how terrible would this movie be with stringy Jim Carrey going around, Michael?
Geez, do you remember Once Bitten? There's your answer.
I don't.
Yeah, that movie used to always be on HBO, so I've seen that movie like 100 times. Obviously, there's no way it could have happened. Lost Boys could not happen with Jim Carrey. It's just, so stringy.
Here's another cast member that I don't think would have fit at all. Ben Stiller also auditioned for a role. Can you imagine Ben Stiller in any of the roles?
No. Maybe the role of the dog. He could have played the dog.
Okay. If they made it a talking dog, or you just think he'd kind of fit that space?
Oh, he could talk if he wants. He could just romp around and just sort of shove his paws in people's faces. You know, he doesn't have to be the Shaggy Dog starring Tim Allen.
That's a great movie. Not.
Is it, though? Sorry. Okay, good. You totally redeemed yourself.
Hit you with a little Wayne's World there. Yeah. Right, chit. Okay, well, that's it for Interesting Facts. We're going to be back on the other side, take a quick bathroom break. We'll have a clip from Lost Boys and the full review.
Wait a minute, what are you doing, Don?
I need fuel.
You're a creature of the night, Michael. Just like out of a comic book. You're a vampire, Michael. My little brother, a goddamn shit-sucking vampire. Well, you wait till Mom finds out, buddy.
Sam, you wait.
Sam! Stay back!
Just
stay
wait! Back. Let me talk! Wait a minute! Sam!
Okay, we are back from the bathroom break, ready to discuss Lost Boys, the full review. JD, are you ready?
Let's rock.
All right. So the film begins with an over-the-water shot. It pans up, and we see the Santa Clara Boardwalk. Of course, this is the real Santa Monica Boardwalk that you can visit. On the carousel, we see David, our main villain, played by Kiefer Sutherland. JD, first thoughts on Kiefer Sutherland in the role of David.
I always feel that he needs a shower. Okay. Am I the only one that thinks that? And seeing him the first time, I really want to give him some Axe body scrub and some L'Oreal hair product.
So you think he looks a little dirty, a little greasy?
A little bit, yeah.
And then we have the rest of his cronies. I have their names written down somewhere. I don't remember off the top of my head. But so, of course, we've got Alex Winter from the Bill and Ted series. There's a couple of young actors in there. Brooke McCarter's one of them. Billy Worth. Any thoughts on the other vampires there?
They have a pretty good cadre of vampires here. Like, these are some good-looking, creepy, scary, punky guys. And, you know, obviously we don't know they're vampires yet, but we're still scared of them. They're rough around the edges.
How excited do you think Schumacher was to hire those good-looking guys?
I'm assuming very exciting. Especially to get Alex Winter, who I will probably hopefully just refer to as the little one from here on out.
Nice. So David's moving in on some dude's girlfriend on the carousel. The guy tries to like puff his chest out a little bit, and David grabs the guy by the cheeks and squeezes before the security guard chokes him with a knife stick, and he orders them to leave the boardwalk. Later that night, the security guard is walking to his car when something comes flying out of the sky and swoops in on him. We don't know what happens to the security guard, but JD, what do you think of this first scene here?
It's a really great opening to the movie, and I think that it does a great job of balancing both the California culture and the menacing fear that we will experience throughout this movie.
The next day, we see Michael, Sam, and Lucy. They're driving into Santa Clara. JD, first thoughts on the main characters here. We've got Jason Patrick as Michael. We've got Corey Haim as Sam, and we've got Diane West as Lucy. What do you think about these three?
Well, I'm more so concerned with the fact that isn't this the exact same opening scene as Karate Kid?
Yes, it is.
Is this just not like, maybe this is just what movies were back then, but I'm sitting here watching it, and I'm like, wait a second, we've reviewed this scene already.
Yeah, all that was missing was like the car breaking down and the mom gets out and like, come on, LaRusso's! And like they give a little push start. They don't break down though, so that's good. Better vehicle. But yeah, I think Corey Haim, this is a really good role for him. If you like his movies, this is probably my favorite Corey Haim movie. Definitely my favorite Jason Patrick movie. I can't think of other than Speed 2, which is just horrendous. You know, he's not I don't know. What do you think of Jason Patrick? He's in a lot of good things, but I feel like he's like on the quiet end.
Well, so you're admitting that you've seen Speed 2. Did we discuss that when we did the review of Speed? Have I made fun of you for that yet?
You can make fun of me for it. I think I saw it on TBS one time, like a rerun, and I was just like, oh, this is brutal. I don't think I even bothered ever renting the movie.
Yeah, same here, man.
Well, people are strange, and that's playing in the background here when they pass the Welcome to Santa Clara sign, and on the back it says Murder Capital of the World. We have a montage of the town of Santa Clara, and they pull up to Grandpa's house. Sam lets Nanook out of the car. JD, are you a fan at all of animals in films?
That's a weird question.
Well, I'm a weird guy.
Yeah, I'm a fan of animals in films, and I typically am more sad when the animal gets harmed than when watching a human get harmed in a movie.
Yeah.
Kill all the people you want, leave the dog alone.
I like when the animal serves a purpose, like in this movie, but I don't like it when there's an animal just for the sake of having one. Like, well, there's the dog. Oh, he's got to run out.
That's a great point that you make, that I think a lot of times in screenwriting, people telling stories gloss over, they include an animal for the sake of including an animal, knowing full well that it's going to pull on the heartstrings of, say, me.
Yeah.
But I mean, comparatively, if you look at what they did with the dog in I Am Legend, I mean, it was another necessary animal in the film that plays a part. They're a character, like Free Willy.
Okay. Okay, well, here's my weird question of the day. JD, what's your favorite animal movie, and why is it Homeward Bound?
Damn it, you knew I was going to say Homeward Bound. You knew it. I remember seeing Homeward Bound with my grandma in theaters, and when we went to go see Homeward Bound, this is the 90s, mind you, the line was literally out the door, down the street, and around the corner. It was like that scene in Dirty Work with the movie line.
Yeah. Future episode for sure. We got to cover that one. Also, Michael J. Fox is in that last week's episode, Back to the Future, in the archives. Check it out. Anyway, we find Grandpa laying on the porch. He looks dead here, and Sam comments that if he's dead, can we move back to Phoenix? He sits up and says, I'm playing dead, and doing a good job of it from the sound of it. Inside the house, Sam is complaining about not having TV. He's mad that he won't be able to see MTV. Of course, MTV was just massive in the 80s and 90s. Outside, Grandpa comments that Lucy is the only one he knows that's never improved her situation by getting divorced. We cut to Sam and Michael. They're running around the house. They open up a door to Grandpa's like workshop area, and he's got all these dead animals and antlers everywhere. And then we hear Grandpa say, there's rules. He opens the fridge and says, no one opens the second shelf. That's mine. Michael asks if it's true that Santa Carla is the murder capital of the world. And Grandpa says, let me just say this. If all the corpses stood up at one time, we'd have a heck of a population problem. JD, what do you think of Grandpa's house? This is a really cool set piece.
It really is a cool house. And I think most kids probably remember their grandpa or grandparents' house very, like, affectionately. It's almost like an amusement park of its own right. So I like what they did with the grandpa. I like what they did with who he is and his rules and his kooky little house. And, you know, at the end of the day, nobody wants to go back to Phoenix.
Yeah, I mean, I like his little shelf in the refrigerator, his double stuffed Oreos that he keeps in the fridge, and then his cold root beer. I mean, it's just he's like living the dream.
Are you a root beer fan, Kyle?
I love root beer.
Are you a cream soda fan?
I am not.
There's a good distinction between the two. I personally like both.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. I like a nice cold root beer in a mug. Like an icy mug, or I'll drink it right out of the bottle. You give it to me in a can, I send it back.
Let me lay this on you, Kyle. How about a nice cold root beer?
Yep, I'm with you.
Topped off with root beer schnapps.
Ooh. I'm in. I like it.
Yeah, that's a delicious combo.
With a nice, like, foot-long Coney dog?
That's the way to go. You're onto something there.
Okay.
I remember one time in college we made root beer floats with root beer schnapps, and that was quite exciting.
Then you guys played hide the salami in the shower?
No, then we stole a grill
from
somebody's backyard.
Hey, that was my grill, asshole. <Might have been. laughs> So later that night, we have Sweaty Sax Guy rocking out here to I Still Believe. And we have our first shot of Michael's love interest star, played by Jamie Gertz. I know we talked a little bit about her in the teaser trailer episode, but what did you think of seeing Jamie Gertz here as star?
I'm just going to go ahead and admit that when we were doing the intro before I had finished watching the movie, I did not recognize who she was until watching the movie. And then just like, boom, blew my mind that she's the mom from Still Standing. So it was so weird to see her watching the movie and realizing exactly who she was and getting on the same page as you, because I know you're a big fan of her.
Yeah, she had a reoccurring role in Entourage too for a couple episodes. So she's been around the Hollywood industry for a long time, so good for her. Lucy is walking next on the boardwalk. She comes across a giant mural of missing people and posters, and the wife of the security guard is actually putting up his missing poster. I never noticed that until this watch. JD, did you see that on the rewatch?
I did notice it this time, but never. It's a great little detail that if you blink, you miss it.
Yep. Lucy comes across a young kid who can't find his mom. She brings him into the store, and the mom comes to get him. And then we meet Max, played by Edward Herman. He's rocking some pretty gnarly shoulder pads here. JD, what were your first thoughts on Max here?
He's a typical Max from the typical 80s working at a typical video store.
Hey, real quick, I'm assuming you recognize Edward Herman from another role. And I'm just going to put it out there that you saw him in Richie Rich.
That's right. He's Mr. Rich, isn't he?
Yep, he sure is. Another great 90s kid movie. Well, I don't know if great.
Well, we'll save that for the future episode when we review it and come up with whether it's great or not.
Good point. Next, Sam enters the comic book shop. Let's listen to our first clip here.
prom, guys?
Just scope in your civilian wardrobe.
Pretty cool, huh?
Or a fashion victim.
Listen, buddy, if you're looking for the diet frozen yogurt bar went out of business last summer.
Actually, I'm looking for a Batman number 14.
That's a very serious book, man.
Only 5 in existence.
4, actually. I'm always looking out for the other 3. Look, you can't put the Superman number 77s with the 200s. They haven't even discovered red kryptonite yet. And you can't put the number 98 with the 300s. Lori Lamaris hasn't even been introduced.
Where the hell are you from? Krypton?
Phoenix, actually. But lucky me, we moved here.
JD, first thoughts on this scene and first impressions of the Frog Brothers, Edgar and Alan.
I love hearing their name together like that because it is just so exciting. The Frog Brothers are pretty cool, and I think for most of us 90s kids, like, this is like the dream that you would walk into a comic book store and you would be looking through comics and then you would just encounter like these really two cool kids that wanted to be your friend but also wanted to help you fight vampires. It's like the scene is just lifted right out of Monster Squad.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good comparison. Same year as well. So, yeah, a lot of similarities there. But yeah, so let's talk about the two characters, Edgar and Alan. So Edgar's played by Corey Feldman. Jameson Newlander's playing Alan. Jamie Newlander hasn't had a real big movie career. He's kind of known for this movie and pretty much this movie alone. But the old Feld dog has had a pretty long career. I know we've talked about him in a couple other episodes, but what do you think about him as Edgar Frog?
He's definitely the Frog Brother to remember. He seems to have more of the leadership role. He knows what he's doing. And Feldman does a great job of putting his expertise down in this. And to me, at least, I like to pretend that after Lost Boys, I would have to check the years on this, but then he moves out to the Burbs. And then we'll get to see him later with Tom Hanks.
So the Burbs is going to come a couple years later. But this would go right into... I want to say it's Goonies, Stand By Me, Lost Boys, right into License to Drive, right into Dream a Little Dream, and then to the Burbs. I believe that's the correct path. But
so it's perfect. Everything he does leads up to him saying, I've had enough of this shit. I'm moving out to the Burbs, thinking he's going to settle down, yeah, only to find the plot to what I think is one of the best movies ever made.
And then he goes right into the voice of Pizza Dude's Got 10 Minutes and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
He's just diving further and further away from California.
Star gets on the back of David's dirt bike here, and David looks over at Michael and he just kind of smirks and takes off. You can see Star look back at Michael as they drive off. We cut to the parking lot where the guy and the girl from the carousel from earlier in the back of their car. The girl hears a loud scratching noise, and then all of a sudden the roof comes off, and they scream as something swoops in to get them. JD, this is the second time we've kind of had the same shot in the movie so far. What do you think of this filmmaking style with the upward camera shot kind of swooping down on the vehicle?
It definitely acts to disorientate you a little bit. I mean, it's kind of a POV almost of a shot, and you get to experience what the filmmaker's hoping will scare you and make your stomach churn a little bit. You know, if you get motion sickness, maybe this isn't the best kind of style for you. I don't know.
And here's why I'm asking the question. I think in today's filmmaking, they would green screen it where you can actually see the vampires kind of like coming in and actually getting them. But because they didn't have that technology, I don't think they could pull it off with this scene. So they go with that POV shot. Do you like that better than actually seeing the characters?
You know, I think that you hit it right on the nose when you say that it's them trying to make the most of what they had. And at the end of the day, it's just better than claymation shots like they did in RoboCop. So let's focus on that.
Sam and Grandpa have a quick scene in the garage where he starts up the car and says, let's go to town. And then he just shuts it off and goes, yeah, that's about as close to town as I like to get. Then we see Sam walking back into the comic book shop next. Alan says, do you notice anything different about Santa Carla yet? Sam says, no, pretty cool place if you're a Martian. Edgar says, yeah, you know, this is just a cover. We're dedicated to a higher purpose. We're fighters for truth, justice, and the American way. Sam just kind of blows him off, and Edgar again tries to get him to read this vampire comic. Alan says, our number's on the back. Just pray you never need to call us. JD, what'd you think of this scene?
Again, this is kind of everything that I ever wanted out of my childhood happening to somebody else, so I'm completely jealous.
Yeah, I think it's a cool little scene here. But it does set up for later in the story, which we'll get to. Michael is on the boardwalk. Star comes up to him and offers to pierce his ears for him because he was looking at having it done by like a carny looking dude. Michael asks her to go grab something to eat, and that's when David and the other vampires arrive, and we hear David speak for the first time. He wants to know where she's going, and she seems a little annoyed, agitated by David here, almost a little scared of him. She goes to get on the Michael's bike, and David says her name. He's like, Star. And she walks over and just gets on the back of his bike. And then David tells Michael if he knows where Hudson's Bluff is, overlooking the point. Michael says, I can't beat your bike. You don't have to beat my bike. You just have to keep up. So we have another montage next. We see the bikes going across the beach, under the piers, through the woods, to grandmother's house we go. I thought this was a pretty cool montage, JD. What'd you think?
Well, again, it's the 80s, so obviously there has to be a dirt bike scene.
Over under, how many montages do you think are in this movie?
Seven.
You might be a little over, but you're not far off. It seems like about every 10 minutes, it was like there's like a quick montage. But again, I think they should bring those back. Underrated. David and Michael are neck and neck riding here. David keeps egging him on to go faster. Eventually, Michael skids and slides right before he's about to fall off the cliff. He gets up and punches David and yells, just you, man. Just you. David replies by saying, how far are you willing to take this? How baller is that? He doesn't even get mad by getting punched. He's just like, how far you want to take this, boy?
Yeah, that's a good lesson to learn for all you kids out there. If you have a bully picking on you, don't back down. You don't have to fight back. Just ask them, how far are they willing to take this?
Yeah, I feel like that backed him off right away. Like, okay, well, this guy's not even mad that I punched him. He just wants to know if I'm basically willing to die. No, I'm not. Can we be friends? So, and that's what they do. They enter a cave. David explains it used to be one of the hottest resorts in all of Santa Carla. Star kind of looks on. She seems a little worried that Michael might be falling into David's tricks. We cut to Sam, who's reading the comic in his room when his mom enters, along with Grandpa, who's brought like a little varmint of some sort to put on his dresser. As soon as they leave, Sam says, you're history, buddy, and puts the animal in his closet. We cut back to the cave. Marco has brought in some food for everyone to eat, and Michael says he's fine when they offer him some. But David leans in and says, you don't like rice, Michael? How could a million Chinese people be wrong? That's what I say every day when I go to Chipotle. How could they be wrong?
Is that considered racist nowadays? Can you say that anymore?
I don't know. Hashtag no racist. He opens a box and takes a bite. David says, how are those maggots, Michael? Michael smirks, but David says, you're eating maggots, Michael. How do they taste? Marco brings over a bottle to David, and David pops up the lid, takes a swig. He's got like a weird, almost like sexual look on his face when he takes a drink of that. What I assume is fruit punch. We don't know yet. He tells Michael to drink some of it and to be one of us. Star urges him not to do it. She says it's blood, but he assumes it's fake like the noodles and the rice. And then we have another montage here as Cry Little Sister plays in the background, and Michael takes the drink of the blood from the canister. JD, what'd you think of this scene?
I love this whole scene with this whole underground cavern layer that they got going on. This always creeped me out with the maggots and the worms and the drinking of blood. And I don't know. It's just a really great job of like sort of positioning who the vampires are, what they want, what they're capable of, and just how fuckery they can get. And it's I don't know, it's just creepy. It just gives me it's such a great inspirational shot for like any time you're trying to write a scene that goes into different. Do you get what I'm trying to say?
I feel like David does a great job of playing mind games with him. You know, getting him to believe that the rice is maggots, the noodles are worms, and then all of a sudden he's got this bottle and he's just like, it's not blood, take a drink, no big deal. And he's like, oh yeah, it's not, because, you know, the maggots weren't real either. So he just kind of buys into him very quickly. So I think David has that kind of personality where he's definitely a natural born leader, and I think he does a good job of getting people to follow him very quickly because of it. So it's a cool scene. Also, I really dig the song that plays in the background too. It's one of my favorite songs from this movie. Later that night, they arrive at a bridge. Michael says, "What's going on?" And David kind of jokes, "Yeah, guys, what's going on?" And he tells Marco to show him what's going on, and Marco just jumps off this bridge. Paul and Dwayne follow, and then David is the last to go, and he can kind of like peek down and see that they're just hanging on to a metal rod that's attached to this bridge. But there's a train approaching, so Michael has to make the decision to jump down and do the same thing, which he does. And eventually they all start to let go one by one. And eventually it's just David and Michael. He says, "You're one of us. You just have to let go." And he disappears into the fog. Michael holds on for as long as he can until he falls for seemingly forever and then wakes up in his own bed. JD, this scene always seemed to confuse me a little bit. I mean, it's just so far-fetched. I guess I really don't understand it and the purpose behind it. What did you think?
Well, I don't know. I take it more as like a metaphor for him having to give up control over who he is and his own destiny. I want to know the logistics of, does he die here? Is this all an illusion again? Because when he wakes up in his own bed and everything is fine, his entire world is different. So there's something in this transitional act that occurs that essentially turns him into the next phase of him. Of being a vampire. So I don't know. I personally like it. It's that whole challenge in becoming one of us and giving up control and your free will. And he's deciding it, as opposed to what we reviewed in Dracula, where Dracula decides who he's going to seduce and then fight and then turn.
Great episode in the archives. Check it out. The next morning, Michael's asleep and his mother calls. Sam has to wake him up, and Michael has to put on sunglasses to talk to his mom. Or she says, "You know, you come home late, you sleep all day," and she makes him kind of feel guilty. You know, she wants to go on this date, and he finally agrees to watch Sam. So later that evening, we also see Grandpa's going out for the night, and he puts on some Windex to kind of cover up his cologne. JD, what's the weirdest thing that you ever sprayed on yourself to try and make yourself smell good?
Actually, I do have a great story for that, and it's not that I sprayed something on myself, but there was one time in college when I had a little too much to drink.
Okay.
And I was like, I need to mask my breath. So I ate some leaves.
Oh.
And to me, that made perfect sense, because if my breath tasted like leaves, then nobody would know that I had been drinking.
I always heard that if you sucked on a penny, it would make you pass a breathalyzer. So that was my go-to. I'd put a penny in my mouth, suck on it, and then put in like two pieces of gum.
Yeah, I think you got taken there, because you just gave Honest Abe a little blow poke.
Nice. Grandpa leaves, and outside we hear motorcycles revving their engines. They're, you know, flashing lights inside the house. It's blowing windows open. And we hear David yelling, "Michael, Michael." All I could think of is Arrested Development this whole time. When they finally open the door to go outside, there's nobody there. It's completely dead silence outside. It's just a little gust of wind. Sam and Michael are just like, what the heck's going on? And then that's when Sam tells Michael, he's like, what's going on? What's going on with everything? And Michael just tells him to go upstairs and take a bath. So Sam is up in the tub. He's singing, "Ain't Got a Home." And then Michael's downstairs. He's crumbling over, trying to drink some milk. And then he starts making his way upstairs. He gets to the bathroom. And when he opens up the door, he looks possessed. Sam doesn't see him because he's dunked his head under the water trying to get the shampoo off. So Nanook jumps at him and attacks him. The door slams and Sam comes out looking for Michael and Nanook. And he finds Michael on the floor with a bloody hand. And he wants to know why Nanook would bite him. Michael says he was protecting you. And then Sam tells him to turn around and look in the mirror. And his reflection is starting to fade, kind of like the photo in Back to the Future. Sam runs upstairs and says, "You're a vampire, my own brother, a goddamn shit-sucking vampire. You wait till Mom finds out, mister." He runs and locks the door upstairs and grabs the phone to start calling the Frog Brothers. JD, what'd you think of this scene?
I love when he's going to tell Mom.
It's such a good line, too. What's he call him again? Goddamn shit-sucking vampire.
Yeah.
Clever writing.
No, exactly. It's great.
Let's listen to this quick scene here with Sam and the Frog Brothers.
"You did the right thing by calling us. Does your brother sleep a lot?"
"Yeah, all day."
"Does the sunlight freak him out?"
"He wears sunglasses in the house."
"Bad breath? Long fingernails?"
"Yeah, his fingernails are all a bit longer. He always had bad breath, though."
"He's a vampire, all right."
"All right, here's what you do.
Get yourself a good sharp stake and drive it right through his heart."
"I can't do that. He's my brother."
"Okay, we'll come over and do it for you."
"No."
"You better get yourself a garlic t-shirt, buddy, or it's your funeral."
JD, what'd you think of this scene?
I love just how professional the Frog Brothers are. They really are. Like, they don't care who you are or where you're from. If you're a vampire, maybe you're loved, maybe you're a sibling, you stake the bastard.
Yep. And if not, you better wear a garlic necklace. So in Michael's bedroom, he's floating up to the ceiling here. This kind of reminded me of the scene from Ghostbusters with Sigourney Weaver, where she just starts floating over the bed. He eventually kind of makes his way out the window, and then Sam sees him outside, and he's on the phone with his mom, and Michael gets on the phone too. He says, "Don't listen to him," and he screams for Sam to help him. Eventually, they hang up after Sam tells his mom that he's trying to kill him, and then Michael's outside screaming for help, and I love the part here where Sam calls him a flying nun after Michael says he's not a vampire. I thought that was a good moment, though, between the two brothers, where eventually he does open up the window and he lets him in and they kind of make a pact to stick together. What'd you think of that scene?
Yeah, I like that they make that pact to stick together, because at the end of the day, vampire or not, what the Frog Brothers don't understand is your siblings matter. So I mean, it would almost be interesting if, and maybe this happens in the later movies, of which I haven't seen, but if the Frog Brothers had to go through and experience what it's like to have one of them turn into a vampire.
It's a spoiler. 1, 2, 3. It's in the sequels. It does happen.
There we go. See, I came upon it independently.
There you go. Yes. The sequels are, I think, get a lot of hate. They're better than you would think they are. I think they are, but
I had every intention of watching it, and then yada, yada, yada. It's been like 8 years and I still haven't seen it.
Yeah. Second one's not very good, though. Third one is much better. But anyway, here. So Lucy arrives home. Sam says he was just scared from a vampire comic. And she's like, "From a comic book?" And he's like, "Scary comic book, Mom." She goes over and sees the spilled milk on the ground. And she puts the milk carton on the table. And we see Laddie on the milk carton, Star's little brother. Did you notice that? I don't think I ever noticed that either.
I did not pick up on that one.
Okay. Sam enters Lucy's bedroom. He says he wants to stay in bed with her tonight because of the scary comic. And she comments, she's like, "Ooh, you smell like garlic." And he kind of rearranges his bathrobe and we see he's wearing a garlic necklace like the Frog Brothers told him to. JD, have you ever gotten scared to the point when you were a little kid where you had to go sleep with Mom in the bed?
Yeah, as far as I can recall, there's never been a time when that has happened. I will tell you that I was one to line up my stuffed animals between the bed and the wall so the monsters couldn't attack me.
Okay. Yeah, I used to do that too. Like, I, for some reason, stuffed animals used to scare me at night, so I'd throw them in the closet. I don't know.
It seems normal.
I blame that on Chucky. I always thought they would come to life and kill me. So, Michael arrives at the cave looking for Star. He wants to know what's happening to him. She says she can't explain and she doesn't know how to help him. So, they start making out and have a sex scene montage. I'm not mad at it. I just don't understand it. JD, what do you think of this scene? It's a bit weird for me.
Well, neither of us have ever transformed into a vampire, so we don't know the needs and the wants of the vampiric teens.
It's just so strange because he comes down and he's like, what's happening? She's like, I can't help you, but let's make out. And then they just start going at it. The dialogue doesn't match what's happening. That's what I don't understand, but we'll move on because, I mean, most of the guys listening to this are going to be like, dude, what are you complaining about?
Well, so. I do. I mean, I do wonder if they are trying to make that connection between the seduction techniques of traditional Dracula and then modern day vampires and just try to do it in a different way. But
the one thing that made me laugh really hard is like they're making out, they get into the bed, and when they lay down, like, you think you're going to start seeing something happen, but then we go and there's a shot of the clouds. I don't understand like why they cut to the clouds. I was just like, I don't know. Sky rockets in flight.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
All right. So after the montage ends, Michael wakes up and checks his bloody hand and it's completely healed. Next morning, he arrives back home and his mom is waiting for him. She wants him to take off the glasses and talk with her, and he has a hard time looking her in the eye. He doesn't want to communicate, and he walks inside and puts his glasses back on, and Grandpa says, "Ooh, looks like I wasn't the only one that got lucky last night." Lucy is dropping off a bottle of wine for Max in the next scene. When she opens the gate to go to the house, the dog attacks her, and she has to run for it, jump over the fence. The dog rips her dress and then tries to break through the gate to get to her. This is a really cool scene. Reminded me a little bit of Silver Bullet, which is the way that it was kind of set up. What do you think of this scene?
Oh, it's definitely a cool scene. I haven't heard somebody reference Silver Bullet in so long.
Also a Corey Haim movie. He's the wheelchair kid. Forgot about that.
Jeez.
Yeah. Nice. I think it's a neat little scene, though. And then we've got another comic book shop scene here where Sam arrives and Edgar and Alan tell him he needs to kill his brother. He'll feel better. Sam says, we just have to kill the head vampire. They tell him if he doesn't kill his brother, they're going to. And Sam says, this all started when my mom went to work for Max in the video store. And, you know, he's also got this dog that's really protective. And, you know, the comic book talks about the head vampire needs a protector. Do you believe in this whole Max theory? Were you buying this when you were a little kid?
It adds up. Obviously, they're sort of making David seem like he was the head vampire. So,
yeah.
You kind of question the Frog Brothers a little bit to be like, hey, no, this innocent guy is just a really cool guy that owns an awesome store and wears cool shoulder pads.
Right. Yeah, I agree. So in the next scene here, Lucy's making dinner when Max and his shoulder pads enter. And let's listen to the first interaction here between Michael and Max.
They're going to change around this house when school starts.
Hey, how you doing? You must be Michael, right?
And you must be Max.
Right. How are you? Well, you're the man of the house, and I'm not coming in until you invite me.
You're invited.
Thanks very much.
JD, what'd you think of this scene here, and Michael inviting Max into the home?
Yeah, for vampire lore, this is a really critical scene because the invitation is what stands out most. And they do it so subtly that you don't necessarily think about it or notice it. It's just sort of like, oh yeah, I invite you in. And we invite people into our home every day. Sometimes they're trying to sell us cable. Sometimes they're trying to sell us legal hooch, but you don't know until you invite them in.
Nice. Sam introduces his guest, the Frog Brothers, Edgar and Alan, to his mother. And then you see Sam kind of feeding Max the cheese, but then he starts choking. He's like, that's not cheese, it's garlic. And then they throw some water on his pants and he doesn't start like steaming. So they turn off the lights and then Edgar's like, he's not glowing. And then they turn the lights on, they put the mirror in his face and he like freaks out because he can see his reflection. And then Max leaves and says, you know what, we're going to have to try this one more time, but at my place. He's pretty nice about it. He didn't get too upset with the kids. What'd you think of this scene though?
It frames everything that the kids are going through in a great way. And I think that for the first time, we start to see the two separate storylines and then even three separate storylines in the way that, again, Stranger Things does it, where you have the kid's story, which is different from the teenager story, which is different from the adult story.
Yeah.
And at this time, we get to see those three separate paths sort of come together. And it's comical. It's funny. And I think there's a lot to be said for the perception of what kids have at even an adult dinner party that they would think, like, I don't know, it's very R.L. Stein-y even.
Oh, nice. Good comparison. We're at the pier next. Michael approaches David and wants to know where Star is. David tells him if he ever wants to see Star again, he needs to follow him. They go to a bonfire party. And we've got Walk This Way blaring in the background, Aerosmith Run DMC song. They sit up in a tree, and David tells them to watch this as they attack all the people at the bonfire. Michael has to resist really hard not to kill one of them, and you can see he's kind of like vamping out. David tells him, now you know who we are, and now you know what you are. You'll never grow old, Michael, but you must feed. What'd you think of this scene?
It's like the bonfire scene from Point Break gone wrong. I love that scene in Point Break. And I never understand why anybody would be like forcefully against being a vampire. Like, is that not like the ultimate though?
Yeah, you don't grow old, you get to fly, and you're pretty much invincible.
Yeah. And all you have to do is kill weak people.
It seems like... Sign me up, dude. I would do that. Sam is sleeping in his bed next. A noise wakes him up. He screams because it's Grandpa's put a stuffed owl on his dresser. He puts the owl in the closet. When he shuts the door, Michael's now in the room, which makes him scream again. And Michael's like, it's okay, Sam. It's all right. He tells Sam he knows what he is now. And then outside we hear Star calling his name. They open the window. And Sam is like, is she one of them? And his question's answered pretty quickly because they turn around and she flies up to the window. She tells Michael that he's not one of them until he makes his first kill. Sam uncovers from the bedsheet to agree, and he says that's what he read in the comic. And then he goes back to hiding under the bedsheets. Michael wants to know why she came here tonight, and she says, I want you to help Laddie and me. And he's like, why did you come? And then she just flees. And leaves. And then Sam yells out to her, don't do anything until we get back to you. He runs and grabs the phone and calls the Frog Brothers. And he's like, I got somebody to help out. I know some people. I'm connected. They arrive at the house. They're all dressed in camo. They steal Grandpa's car and then arrive at the cave. The Frog Brothers do a quick weapons check here. And then Edgar tells Michael, if you vamp out in any way, I will stake you without even thinking. They enter the cave. Sam and the Frog Brothers search everywhere for the vampires. They go through this tunnel. They smell something awful. There's flies everywhere. Edgar says the vampires, they smell. They finally spot them hanging upside down from the ceiling. Edgar climbs up to the vampires. He grabs one of the wooden stakes and says, I don't know which one's the head vampire, so we'll just start with the little one. First come, first staked. Edgar readies his stake and says, good night, bloodsucker. And they have to, he stabs him, blood shoots out everywhere. They have to make a run for it. We hear David yell down that they're dead meat. They crawl back through this tunnel, and David grabs Sam by the ankle Edgar and Alan pull him away and just keep yelling, we got to get him to the sunlight. David's about ready to, looks like he's about ready to bite into him when finally they get to the sun and it burns his hand. And then we see a single crocodile tear go down David's cheek. JD, what do you think of this scene here?
Poor Alex Winter. I mean, really, he's so great in this movie. And to me, this is one of the defining roles of remembering just how creepy and weird his face is. Whoa. And to be just reduced to the little guy and just stabbed and killed. And he's the only one that perishes in this scene. Like, I just feel so bad for him.
Yeah. What do you think of the crocodile tear?
I also feel bad for David. He's going through a lot. A member of his crew just got annihilated. I'm assuming there's some love connection between he and Star that is, it's just a tough day for him. He just woke up. Imagine if you woke up to find your best friend murdered and then people are chasing you around with knives. It's a bad day. It's a bad way to start the day.
And then he's like, well, at least I still got my girlfriend. And he goes downstairs. He's like, damn it. Yeah. I love that you always root for the bad guy, though.
Well, there's no bad guys in movies. There's just individuals who have bad days and bad intentions.
Okay. Outside, let's listen to this quick scene here.
We blew it, man. We lost it.
Shut up.
We unraveled in the face of the enemy.
It's not our fault. They pulled the mind scramble on us. They opened their eyes and talk.
I'll drive. We don't ride with vampires.
Fine. Stay here.
We do now.
Yeah.
Come on, Sam, let's get out of here.
Burn rubber.
Ah!
Christ! Burn rubber does not mean warp speed.
JD, how funny is that line from Edgar Frog where he says they pulled a mind scramble, they talked. What did you think of this scene?
It always throws me off and confuses me to exactly how much the Frog Brothers know. Are they just two kids with, like, wild imaginations, or are they actually vampire experts? Because you realize, like, you don't trust them at first, and then you see that there are vampires, and they're not wrong, and they're yeah. well-equipped, and everything they've been saying and preaching has been true, and then they blame it on a mind scramble, and you're just like, wait, so are you guys capable vampire slayers, or did you guys just get lucky?
I did listen to the director's commentary just because I wanted to get to like some of the main scenes. And Joel Schumacher mentioned like during one of these scenes, he's like, boy, did Feldman and Newlander really buy into this role? He's like, they believed 100% they were the Frog Brothers and they were really there to kill some vampires. Yeah, I think you can see that in their performance. He's just like, man, they're just awesome. He loves the Frog Brothers. They enter the house next. They make their way upstairs, and Michael's carrying Star or Laddie. I can't remember who he has in his arms. But Grandpa stops them, and he's like, hey, do you know the rule about filling up the gas tank after borrowing the car? And Michael's like, no, Grandpa. Well, now you know. So they go back to carrying this lifeless body up the stairs, and Grandpa doesn't seem to care. We have another montage next, of course, of the Frog Brothers and Sam getting ready for battle. And I love this part of the montage where they go into the church to get the holy water. And then people just keep turning back and like giving them like the stink eye. What'd you think of that scene?
It's funny. It's unique. It's clever. And again, are the Frog Brothers crazy or are they geniuses?
They're geniuses. The sun has gone down. We cut to the cave where David opens his eyes and just growls. And then we continue this montage. We kind of cut to Max and Lucy. They're having dinner. And this is the first time that I think you can start to sense that Max maybe isn't who we thought he was. Because Lucy's telling this story about Sam coming into the store and he was just talking crazy. And Max is like, well, what'd he say? And then we don't find out what actually happens. But it's the first time where I was like, I don't like this guy or his shoulder pads. What would you think, JD?
Yeah, we start to see him and his inquisitive nature. Like anytime somebody asks a question like that, it's kind of like an on-the-nose giveaway that maybe something isn't right. Right. You have to play it cool.
Yeah. Now we cut back to the house. Nanook has gotten himself caught in the fence. Sam runs out to go help him, and then Michael follows as well. They finally get him free, and as they're running back in the house, we can overhear everybody from the house. Edgar's yelling, Star's yelling, hurry up, hurry up. We don't see it, but we can kind of hear the vampires, David and all the guys, kind of making their ways toward the house. They finally get inside. They just barely make it. And the first vampire, Dwayne, enters through the fireplace. Upstairs, Paul confronts the Frog Brothers. He sees the tub of garlic in the garlic tub water. He's like, garlic don't work, boys. And Edgar's like, try holy water, death breath. And he scoops some out into his face, and it starts to melt away. Paul is about ready to get the Frog Brothers. He's kind of knocked him down on the ground when Nanook comes to the rescue, and he like karate kicks the guy into the tub. Jake, what do you think of this sequence?
Yeah, the karate kick is hilarious, but I like that there's the difference between the holy water and the garlic being the, you know, recipe for death.
Yeah.
And it makes me ask this question. Do you, Kyle, believe in vampires?
No, I do not.
Not in any way, shape, or form? You think that there's no possibility that maybe, just maybe, there's kind of like this creature of the night who can't go out in the day and lives by a very strict code? I mean, come on. Maybe.
The only vampire I have ever believed in is Gangrel.
You know, damn it. That's so funny that you say that, because I was just going to make fun of you. I was just going to say, you don't believe in vampires yet. You believe in WWF.
Yeah. The Brood, man. Dun, 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 dun. Best entrance ever, I think. Cool song, too.
I loved the gimmick when they used to do the bloodbath.
Yeah, that was awesome.
And they bloodbathed Al Snow, and then he just didn't bathe for like a few episodes after that. You know, he just came out covered in blood and looked confused.
He's method, man.
I loved it.
Downstairs, Sam is trying to wake Michael up when Dwayne grabs Sam by the head and lifts him up. Sam squirts him in the eye with holy water and then shoots him with a bow and arrow. Dwayne plays dead on the floor for a moment. He stands up. He's like, you missed, sucker. And Sam fires back and says, only once, pal. He shoots him, and the arrow pierces all the way through him, knocking Dwayne backwards into the stereo, electrocuting him. And eventually he blows up, and then Sam says, death by stereo. How awesome is that line?
So it's such a great line that I immediately thought that would be an awesome name for a band. And there is a band named Death by Stereo. So
they're pretty good, too. I've listened to them. Yeah, shout out to those guys. One of the things I heard on the commentary was Schumacher said in the original cut when they screened it, everybody was so excited when Sam shot him through the stereo that they missed the line where he's like death by stereo. So they kind of missed that line. So they added in the electrocuting and the explosion.
Oh, that's awesome.
They could pace it a little bit better. Yeah. Sam races upstairs. But Michael, who's following behind him, is cut off by David, who shoves him down the stairs. Sam meets up with the Frog Brothers, and they're like, Sam, we just annihilated one of the vampires. And Edgar's like, well, yeah, Nanook helped a little. We cut to Laddie, who's starting to vamp out, and he shoots up out of the middle of the mattress, just throwing cotton everywhere. Alan says, holy crap, it's the attack of Eddie Munster. Laddie goes to run away. They're about to give chase and probably put a stake to the little guy, but Star jumps in front of him and says, you can't do anything to him. Michael and David are downstairs, and they face off in a mid-air collision here. Michael rams him into the wall, and then David's like, my turn. And then he starts to ram him into the other wall. But Michael grabs a hold of like the frame of the door, and he's able to eventually spin David around and pierce him through the deer antlers. The fight scene was kind of quick, in my opinion. I don't know. I felt like it could have been a little bit better. But I also realized this is a 21-day shoot, and they don't have the type of technology that they probably want to have at that point. But what did you think of this scene?
I always remember it being a longer, more epic fight scene. I thought the same way that you did. Like, when I watched this and I saw it, I was kind of like, wait, did the DVD skip? Did I miss 5 minutes of battle?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what you could add in there to make it better. Again, I'm trying to keep in mind it's 1987. I think the wire sequence is pretty cool where they're fighting in midair and they're kind of flying back and forth from one wall to the other. That's pretty neat. But it was just like, it's such a quick death for David, who's such a badass up to that point.
And so, you would have to think he has more control over his vampiric powers than Michael.
Yeah. Yeah. Star comes down to get Michael, and he's trying to hide himself from Sam. He doesn't want him to see him. They ask, what's the issue? You killed the head vampire. And he's like, I don't feel any different. And Star says she doesn't feel any different either. Lucy and Max enter the house. Sam cuts his mom off at the door, but we see Max kind of just slide right past the boys, and he goes into Grandpa's room where David's dead. He checks his pulse, and he doesn't see Michael and Star kind of hiding in there in the dark. Max walks out and apologizes for his boys, and he says this is his fault. Sam says, I knew it. You're the head vampire. Edgar wants to know how you passed the test. And Max says, you never invite a vampire into your home because it renders you powerless. Sam looks at Edgar. He's like, did you know that? And he's like, of course, everyone knows that. Max says, it was you, Lucy, that I was after all along. I knew that if I got to Sam and Michael first, that you wouldn't be able to say no. Edgar says, oh, great, the blood-sucking Brady Bunch. Max vamps out here, and I love the makeup and stuff on the vampires. It's really cool. The contact lenses are really awesome. But he turns around, and he's like, Lucy, I still want you. Michael comes out and says, I didn't invite you this time, Max. And they attack each other. Max throws him, like, all the way across the room right away. And Sam tries to help out, but Max just, like, throws him in a headlock. And then he holds his hand out for Lucy, and, you know, Sam is yelling, no, Mom, don't do it. And she reluctantly gives him her hand, and that's when we hear Grandpa's horn. And he just comes flying through the house, and his vehicle just happens to be packed with this wood that's shaped like a wooden stake, and it pierces right through Max and sends him flying right into the fireplace, and he explodes on contact. Everyone's checking to make sure they're okay. Lucy calls for Grandpa, who's made his way into the refrigerator. He takes a swig of root beer, and she's like, Dad, are you all right? He says, one thing I never could stand about Santa Carla is all the goddamn vampires. The camera fades out, and that's the end of the film. JD, what'd you think of the ending here?
I'm torn, honestly, and I've got mixed response to the ending. One, I love Grandpa's final line. I think it's hilarious. It's amazing. And you realize you've been sitting through this whole time. You don't necessarily know what his take is. He seems to be overlooking things. He's weird. He's eccentric. And then, like, oh, yeah, duh, there's vampires. They suck. Which is really cool because it suggests this isn't the only sect of vampires. There's more out there.
Right.
And he's encountered them before. The part that I don't like is just how convenient it is for him to just come crashing home at that exact moment.
Right. Yeah, that didn't make a lot of sense. Now, the wooden stakes actually do make sense because there's a scene earlier in the film where Michael, Sam, and the Frog Brothers come and they borrow his car. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, he's in the field. He's putting together the fence, and the fence is one of those wooden stakes.
Right. Yeah, I got that much. It's just, I mean, there's the right place at the right time. And then there's like the deus ex machina where it's just, we need to end this. Let's just bring in a character that will come crashing in. And he happens to have the thing to kill the person that is doing the thing. It's just, it's too convenient.
Let's recap. So the movie actually turned, as we're recording this, now this episode will probably come out the next day or the day after, but today is actually the 31-year anniversary of Lost Boys, the day it came in the theater. So it's been 31 years. How do you feel like the movie has?
This is a movie that is obviously very classic for many people, and I think it holds up. The reason why people love this movie, that's not gone. I mean, the acting, the music, the setting, everything about Lost Boys it's phenomenal, and it's worth the watch. And so if this is your first time watching it, audience, I hope that you are as nostalgic over it the next time you watch it. And if you're like us and you remember this movie from when you were a kid and just, you know, how exciting it is to see a lot of these things again, it's a good movie, and I look forward to watching it again. Maybe I will get into the sequels after we sort of reviewed this episode. I don't know. Okay. Kyle, you'll have to sell me on the sequels.
I'll do my best. It's a tough sell, though, I will admit. It's not for everybody. But, you know, one thing I'll add in there, if you haven't watched this movie in a long time and maybe you don't have it on DVD or Blu-ray, for sure go buy the Blu-ray. It's really good. But it is on Netflix right now to watch it if you have that subscription. So you can put it on there. It's a quick watch, too. The movie's only like an hour and 30 minutes long. I feel like it kind of flies by, too. It's a good movie. The soundtrack's awesome. The cast is awesome. I mean, yeah, it's 1987. The special effects aren't as good as they would have been 10 years later, but I think that also was part of the reason they were really creative and outside of the box thinking on their POV shots and things like that. So overall, I think it's an awesome movie. It's definitely one of my favorites. We'll be back next week, though, JD, and we're going to be reviewing a movie that's not in one of my favorites, but it is a movie that I like a lot. We're going to be doing Blue Chips with Shaquille O'Neal. Can you dig it? JD, are you ready to watch Blue Chips?
Honestly, I am. After reviewing the trailer, I'm super stoked about this movie for reasons I don't even fully comprehend yet. It's been so long since I've seen it. So bring it on, Little Penny.
Yeah, it's going to be a good movie. The teaser is going to drop on Monday. The full episode probably going to be out on like Friday of next week. I apologize. I'm going out of town. Going to be in the great state of Texas. I'll be in Austin. So, it should be a fun time. I'm expecting to sweat my balls off. Sweaty balls. As usual, follow us on social media. We're at Back in Time Pod, Twitter, Instagram. We've got a Facebook. Throw us a follow on there. We don't have many friends on Facebook. It's a little depressing, JD. I mean, we've got 69. It's a good number, but that's exactly how many friends we have on Facebook, and we've got 5,000 followers on Twitter. So I feel like people are maybe holding out on us a little bit. What do you think?
Just engage with us, guys. If you follow us on Twitter, just go to Facebook and like us. I get it. It's the same content, but be our friend. Come on, do it for Mr. Rogers.
It's lonely. It's lonely there on Facebook world. You can also shoot us an email, backintimepodcast@gmail.com. Send us a note on what you want to hear us review. I've been getting some good ideas online. I know Paranormal Pat, shout out to Paranormal Pat in his podcast. He wanted us to count how many times they say Michael in this movie. And I got through about 10 minutes and I was like, well, that's just not going to happen. So I love the idea, but I just didn't have the energy to write down how many Michaels there were. And I certainly couldn't take a drink every time they say it because I would just be piss drunk at this point.
Well, that's a fun game.
Yeah, that would be a tough one. That'd be a fun – we should do like an episode of Arrested Development and take a shot every time Job goes, Michael. But yeah, so as usual, we appreciate your guys' support. We appreciate you guys hitting the download button. Drop us a 5-star review. But that's it for this week's episode. We're going to climb back into our DeLorean. JD's going to punch in the date. I don't know if we're coming back to today. Maybe he's going to send us back to the 1800s. We'll figure out what he does. But it's time to hit 88 miles per hour. And we'll be back next week with a new episode. See ya.
Michael.
When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange, when you're strange.